And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. Want to give out a few couple of provisos. I know many of you have watched a number of these episodes on YouTube, so you don't get the ads and the music and all of that kind of stuff, and the various pleas for donations that we have during those commercial breaks. And there are those of you, of course, that fast forward the commercial breaks after you download them, which we provide for you for free, which we allow you to do because we're not dicks like that. However, it is slightly a dick move to keep really benefiting from everything that we do and never give anything back, right? Now, we're not saying just money, right? There are many ways to give back to a radio network that is spreading the truth and allowing people to express their views without cutting them off, reducing them to a 30-second soundbite, and or trying to paste them into a corner where they can't actually express their views. That's the kind of media we don't like. And if you don't like that either, that's probably why you're listening to us, and that's probably why you need to be supporting us. Share the links. Share the American Freedom Radio a smartphone app. It doesn't matter what you do. However, of course, I'm not going to lie. Donating really helps. Seriously. I've just updated all the buttons on my website now, so you can donate like $2.50 a week, and that winds up being $10 a month. All right. There you go. And we've upgraded the studio and everything for you. We're not going anywhere. Just help us do what we do. Now, on to more important things. I bet you a whole bunch of people skipped through that. There's my very special guest, Jeff Doherty, the Christian whistleblower, who has been on Coast to Coast AM, had millions and millions of views on his YouTube videos. Indeed, quite a popular and interesting man. Jeff, welcome to the program.
It's great to be back with you, Vinny. It's always an honor and a privilege to be with you.
Now, your whole bit is being the Christian whistleblower, right? How did that actually originate? But before you answer, just recently I've come to the recognition that doesn't matter what I talk about, there will always be, I love God, I love Jesus, convert now, give them your donation money, comments all over the section. And honestly, I pray for salvation from these horrible, annoying Christians sometimes, just sometimes.
I feel your pain, Benny. I feel your pain. And actually, as to the name Christian whistleblower, somebody went on Coast after I was on and kind of was attempting to smear me with that name, but I thought, you know what? I like that. It sounds marketable. I think I'll grab it. But, you know, as far as a Christian whistleblower, you know, if you go back to, I guess, the most famous whistleblower now currently would be Snowden. In order to be a whistleblower, you have to have been an integral part of something for an extended amount of time to be able to have the expertise. And requisite with being a whistleblower is realizing, or at least coming to realize, that there are cracks in the foundation. There's inaccuracies, there's things that are not correct. And after 20 years, or really during 20 years of being a licensed minister with three of the largest Protestant organizations in the world, I came to the conclusion that I could no longer remain a part of Christianity based on things I learned about Christianity. So coming out and talking about Christianity, really giving people the information that modern-day Christianity is a religion that is in competition with what Jesus or Yeshua originally created on with his disciples. That's how you get the whole Christian whistleblower and a rather long soundbite, but there you go.
Mm. I think somebody told me the other day the Council of Nicaea was the Roman meeting with the emperor there and all the senators that decided that they would declare Jesus a god. And then Constantine, like a week later or something like that, calls another meeting and he goes, would you mind if you also declare me a god?
Absolutely, and that's all true. And this is, you know, a couple hundred years after Paul was doing all his work. So the foundation was well laid and the fix was well in by the time Nicaea and Constantine came along. But here we are 2,000 years later. And it's still one of the taboo subjects, and that's what is one of my big frustrations, even within the truth movement.
it might have been the founding of that opposite kind of propaganda, you know? Like, if you want to do something really nasty in a meeting, do it in a place called Nicaea. Oh, God damn. I crack me up. I do.
I didn't see that one coming, Vinny. That's good.
Yeah. Well, apparently the Christian world didn't see that coming either. Sorry, I'm in a really excited, hyper mood today, ladies and gentlemen, because I just got a new green screen in, and I'm like, this is cool. I look like a newsman. But anyway. So, Jeff, we're talking about Christianity, how it's sort of going in the opposite direction to what Jesus would have said, because I was wondering about what post to talk up this interview for. And was the angle to talk about, is Christianity really serving Satan, or is it in competition with Jesus, right? Because I came to that sort of wondering, I am wondering, are the rules of Christianity anything like what Jesus would have done? Was Jesus a real dude? Did he do everything that they say that they do in the Bible? A lot of unanswered questions for those people who are not biblical scholars who use belief, you know? Is there forensic evidence? Because we don't have stuff like that available now, thousands of years after the fact, to a lot of these accounts. And it comes down to, do you believe it or do you not? That is where you get believers who are zealous, because they don't know what they know. They think they know.
And you make an excellent point, Vinny. If you confine yourself to strictly historical knowledge, extra-biblical historical knowledge, if you confine yourself to what we would call empirical knowledge and understanding, it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to prove that a man named Jesus ever really lived. Now, I personally am convinced that he did live, but the important thing is that it doesn't really matter, because Jesus himself said, it's not my physical body, it's not my life, it's not the places I went, it's not the things I did, it's not where I was born, where I died, it's none of that. He said, it's my words that are spirit, it is my words that are life. So if there was no Jesus physically living on planet Earth, even if his teachings as we now know them are an amalgamation and a conglomeration of different people over the years, even if Jesus never existed, one thing we do know for certain is that this true teaching of what we call Jesus, or really more properly the Yeshua movement, this true teaching, these true ways, this true way of life does exist, and that cannot be debated. And I submit that this that does exist without debate, this message of Yeshua, is still able to change lives and still able to empower people and still able to break people free from indoctrination into enlightenment. So really, in the end, it doesn't matter. It sounds blasphemous, but it doesn't even matter if Jesus ever lived from his own mouth.
Yeah, and that's the kind of sign of a true, honest leader who says, hey, I'm fallible, you know? However, there's things that I'm saying that are absolute truth, and those truths will continue to have relevance long after I'm gone. That's kind of what we're saying, right? And
absolutely.
The Bible doesn't talk in literal, right? It only talks in analogy, doesn't it?
Well, I think that the best rule for interpreting the Bible is to, when all possible, take it for meaning what it says it's saying. And when you can't take it for meaning what it says it's saying, then find, you know, kind of the literal truth that the analogies are drawing. But to your point, you know, the Bible is much, much deeper in meaning and in nuance than most people believe. And, you know, this is, you know, controversial, but we're no strangers to controversy on the Vinny Eastwood Show. The Bible, especially the New Testament as we know it today, Thomas Jefferson said that it was filled with some of the greatest teachings and some of the greatest moral teachings that have ever come from the mind of man. And it's also filled with the dung of much lesser personalities, and I agree with that 100%. If I had to give you a percentage, I'd say, well, maybe 50-50, 60-40, diamonds to dung on a good day, but there's a lot of good in there, but there's also a lot of stinky dung, Vinny.
Well, you can find grains of truth even in a desert of lies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I like to be like the old story about somebody walks by a room, they see a boy digging through a bunch of horse crap. He's digging, got a big smile on his face. And they're like, son, what are you doing? And the boy says, with all of this much poop in here, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere. I'm the guy looking for the pony.
I just keep scratching and digging and digging. And, getting this whole idea now that there's this anti-truth movement, right? You know how there's a truth movement and an anti-truth movement, but the anti-truth movement is not actually an establishment thing. It's not the mainstream media or anything. That's not the anti-truth movement. That's the mainstream media. That's the New World Order. The anti-truth movement are the ones who appear to be part of the truth movement, but are actually just trying to confine people down a little, right down this little path here. Okay, don't think about higher expanding consciousness and sense uncensored technologies and things of that kind of thing. We're going to think about these emergency broadcasts that we do every day. We're going to be talking about the most important broadcast we've ever done that we do every day. We're going to talk about how dangerous and absolutely scary and horrible everything is to make you afraid, rob you of your higher thinking processes, and then get you to part with your money by saying that we can sell you products that can protect you from this thing that we're hyping up.
Wow. That's so well stated, Vinny, and it really encapsulates one of my biggest frustrations in the truth movement. You know, we can identify, you know, all the evils of, you know, the monetary system. We can identify the evils of the New World Order. We can identify the evils, you know, in the United States of FEMA and of the Fed. We can identify all the evils of government, all the evils of culture, but it comes to a screeching halt when we start to even suggest that we might consider evils, frailties, conspiracies within the religious realm. You can't talk about anything in religion. All of a sudden, all of the spirit of inquiry and all of a sudden all the objectivity is out the window. And it's like you said before, Jesus, 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 praise God, praise God. But what people don't realize is the thing really that empowers the governmental and the social and the cultural conspiracies, if you will, they had their birth, as you so accurately talked about with Rome, in the religious realm. And for so many years, the religious and the political were one and the same. And I'm not so sure, Vinny, that there's that big of a demarcation between the two of them even today.
Name me one mainstream U.S. presidential candidate that doesn't openly declare I'm Christian and how much they love their pastor and their Bible.
Absolutely. And I mean, even Donald Trump, supposedly the most independent of them all, what is he doing right now? He's meeting with 500 evangelical leaders to convince them, praise God, he's one of them.
I almost threw up in my mouth a little bit, but luckily I'm a professional. It's just this pandering, all right? And I think there's a good reason for this pandering. Well, two reasons, fear and money, all right?
Absolutely.
Ever go up against the Christian establishment, they have a hell of a lot of resources that they can throw at you. Resources that they don't even have to try throwing at you. They've got a whole bunch of devoted followers that will come out themselves and try to attack you. And the other question is, if you want to sell the truth to people, if you Google the one truth, what comes up? Religious websites. You see, that's why there's such a big Christian infiltration of the truth movement. And in my opinion, when you devote yourself to a religion that claims it's the one truth, your search for truth is suddenly over, right? I've sussed it, bro. You know, I found out. You see, these guys, they put it in a book for me. See, all the truth is in there. No, I don't want to listen about the. No, there was no Council of Nicaea. It wasn't in the Bible, which they commissioned to be printed. Okay, it wasn't in it. No. See, that sort of denial. And this is what I want to get down to people, because I know that a lot of people will get angry and there'll be a whole lot of thumbs downs and a whole lot of these praise Jesus, you're all blasphemers, or you can all now be saved type of comments about this. About it's fake Christianity, all right? I know real Christians. Real Christians, for example, Ian Wishart, who's a journalist here in New Zealand, who wrote the book Totalitaria about the New World Order takeover at the UN. Okay? That's a real Christian. He's got 10 kids, and he used to be a mainstream media journalist until he covered a story about international banking fraud and scumbaggery, and they tried to kill him. So he quit being a mainstream media journalist, started being an independent journalist, had to work really, really long hours every day for a fraction of the pay he used to have. Right? That's what being a real Christian, you know, I thought was about. Self-sacrifice for the good of others, doing the right thing, even though it might cause you harm. That, in and of itself, those principles, is the only thing that I'm looking for when somebody says, I'm a Christian. Because saying you're a Christian and being a Christian ain't necessarily the same thing.
And usually it's not. And, you know, not to toot my own horn, but, you know, somebody said it's a sorry dog that won't wag its own tail. You know, not unlike yourself. I was a very, very successful, very high-powered sales rep when I decided that it was time to, you know, to do this. I quit that job, and, you know, now I'm working hard doing what I do. And as you well know, sometimes there's too much month at the end of the money, and we're doing it for passion. We're certainly not doing it to get rich, and if we are, then we're doing it the wrong way. And it's all about being a true believer. It's all about being truly passionate. And I think the same is with you, with me. I couldn't stop this if I wanted to. It's more than something that a calling. It's a way of life. It's something that I absolutely positively have to do. And I think that you know exactly what I'm talking about.
The word is destiny. All right.
It is.
That was why I quit my job, because I suddenly had the realization that I was getting paid by the hour to rob myself of my destiny. And that was it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And do I always have as much money as I need right now? No. But I'll tell you what, I don't wake up in the morning dreading getting up out of bed. I don't, stomp down or choke down a bowl of Post Toasties and jump in traffic and drive for 45 minutes to a place I hate and stay there 40, 50, 60 hours a week, giving my life away for a ridiculously small share of the profits. I'm not miserable anymore. I'm not building somebody else's dream. I've discovered my great basic purpose in life. And even though I may not have the finances at this point that I need, I'm happier now than I've ever been in my life, more fulfilled than I've ever been in my life. And I wake up ready to go and roaring and ready for a new day. And that's what happens when you find your basic purpose. That's what happens when you find your destiny. And really, that's what we're talking about, is trying to help as many people as possible discover the destiny. That's the truth movement. Break out of the trap of what they want you to do and do what you're meant to do.
Yeah. Is somebody telling you to do something that you didn't come up with yourself? Okay. Then they're not leading you to the truth. All right.
Absolutely not. Yeah. And it makes it harder for the rest of us, because you're here to do something that only you can do in the best and most effective way that it can be done. And when you don't do it, people like Vinny Eastwood have to pick up your slack and start trying to do what you're supposed to do to make up for that lack. So as soon as we all get the intestinal fortitude, as soon as we all decide that we're tired of being rats on a wheel and start doing what we're supposed to do, things will get a lot better very, very quickly.
Like, people wouldn't actually believe how quickly. Okay, but what was it? The great Facebook meme that I see is that wisdom isn't just gaining more knowledge. It's letting the stuff that wasn't true go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it was Mark Twain who said, it's a lot easier to convince someone of a lie than convince them they've been lied to.
Yeah, yeah. I believe that this is coming down to this discussion about why people devote themselves to religion. Now, because I'm a salesperson, former salesperson, I might say, I wasn't in it for very long and I got out very quickly. Convincing people and selling them something, okay? If you learn and you know and you're able to put your point across within 30 seconds, then you can sell them. And that's when I look at the evangelicals, that's when I look at these other things. Now, to read the Bible isn't something that's going to take 30 seconds, okay? It's going to take a lot longer than that, which is why most people who claim to have converted to Christianity never actually read it, all right? Probably not even page one. And they don't know what they are. They don't know what they're supposed to be. They got sold a sales pitch. The old saying is, don't sell the steak, sell the sizzle. Because it's the sizzle that brings you in. It's the sizzle that brings your senses alive. And when you tuck into that steak and realize that there's actually not much substance to it whatsoever, you're going to be very disappointed and ask for your money back.
Absolutely, Benny. And, you know, I've probably read the Bible now, if not 200 times cover to cover, then very, very close to it. I was talking with George Norrie one night, and we figured out it probably close to, I'm over 100,000 hours of study in the Bible. They say 10,000 hours makes you an expert. I don't know if I'm tenfold an expert, but it kind of is what it is. And really what it all boils down to, the best analogy I can think of, I was dating a hairdresser one time, and I went with her to this event where she was showing people how to style hair. Instead of doing it with a real person, she had one of these styrofoam heads that she put a wig on, and she showed them how to do the hairstyle. After it was over, I went up and I took that wig off of the styrofoam head, and there was a funnel that she had there that she would use to mix up her products. And I took that funnel and I jammed it right in the top of that styrofoam head, and I realized there was a perfect picture of what most people call Christianity, of what most people call Islam, of what most people call Judaism, of all of the Abrahamic religions. Here's your brain, here's a funnel, and here's the religion pouring into that funnel all of the pre-digested, reconstituted, already decided upon truth, quote-unquote. And that's what religion is. That's indoctrination. Enlightenment doesn't say to you, hey, here's the truth, accept it. Enlightenment says, here's how you learn, here's how you decide, here's ways to weigh things, and then set you free to go ahead and make your own decisions. And really, the big thing for me is helping people to unindoctrinate themselves, helping people to realize what indoctrination is and to make the change into true enlightenment.
If people are programmable, then surely they are deprogrammable.
Absolutely. That's a great quote.
Now, we had this discussion yesterday, and I find myself still doing this. And I'm ashamed, and eventually I'll stop doing it. But I call people idiots, or, you know, I've stopped calling them sheep, but I still call them idiots or dumb or brainwashed or something like that, or some kind of negative spectrum cast off that says, you're not as enlightened as me. And I go, whoa, 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 is that the enlightened thing to do to people who aren't enlightened? No, it's not. No, it's not. You see, if you're constantly checking yourself, you will no longer wreck yourself. And I'm sure Ice Cube would be proud of you. But I mean, look, here's the thing. If you're going out there and you go, oh, I'm Christian, it's so nice, I'm going there. And you don't actually help people. You talk behind people's back. You're actually nasty and you lie about things. And you lie to yourself. And you do really nasty, selfish things just for your own gratification. You're not analyzing your own actions enough. You've allowed yourself to lapse into this coma where you think, you know, I can't lie to myself. I can't be corrupted. I can't be misled. I am doing great. I'm just fine for me, you know. Nobody else can judge me. Well, no, you can be misled. You can be lied to. You can be manipulated. You can be stupid about things, okay? Every child knows that the reason why whenever you've got some time to yourself as an adult and you think back to when you were a child, at some point, all of a sudden, a memory that really, really frustrates you about how stupid you were will just pop into your head all of a sudden. God damn, I was so stupid. You can't stop that from happening. It will happen for the rest of your life because your brain likes to remind you how stupid you are. However, you don't remind yourself enough of that.
You know, Vinny, I'll make a confession. As soon as you started talking about, you know, calling people idiots and speaking down to people, I got that real hot feeling right here in my chest because I still do that. And that is not something that really enlightened people do. And really, when you think about it, that attitude that makes you want to call people idiots and wants to put you up here and put people down there, that's how indoctrination gets started all over again, isn't it? That's the way back into the matrix, quote unquote. So, you know, thank you for reminding me of that. And I want to say this, you probably don't remember this. I was on with you a couple years ago. No, I think I had you on my show, and at that time I was still working and I was still in, you know, trying to figure out and try to make the break. And there were other people that were talking to me trying to make the break. And I asked you to give them advice. Do you remember what you said?
I don't.
You said two words. Can you cuss on this show?
Yeah. Fuck it.
That's what you said. And that helped change my life. And I got five or six of people emailing me saying, you know what? I did what he said and I broke free. And at least three of them are still free and are still doing what they're supposed to do. And you just got to get to that moment sometimes where you're just ready and willing to say, you know what? Even if it doesn't work out, fuck it. I'm going to go for it.
I mean, it's you don't really have much of a choice in life. You've only got a lack of options. It's like, you'll be surprised. The options that will fulfill your life, you'll find, are actually quite limited in the things like you're only one person, you've only got one set of skills or something like that. These you can expand on, these you can change. This be true. But you're still only one person. You can only be in one place at one time, maybe doing one thing or multitasking and doing two things half as good as you normally could.
Absolutely.
All right. So the options of how to live your destiny kind of get smaller and smaller by the minute. What was it on Fight Club? This is your life and it's ending 1 minute at a time. Right. Now, it's a really depressing thought if you think about it really deeply. But if you only think about it for a second, it feels really motivating because it means that this minute you can change your life and you can do it the next minute as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of these days, every one of us, Vinny, are going to be sitting on that proverbial porch, rocking in that proverbial rocking chair. And we're going to be alone with just our thoughts. And we've got a choice. While we're rocking, we can be saying, what if, or we can be rocking and saying, oh boy, I tried it. I gave it my best, but I want to be in that rocking chair laughing at myself. I want to be in that rocking chair knowing I went for it. I don't want to be saying, what if I would have tried? What would have happened? You know, I don't want to leave any regrets. It's like the character in The Highlander said, the Kurgan, he said, it's better to burn out than fade away.
On that note, I was just thinking about my ideal retirement. It would be a retirement village that's also a cannabis shop. You know, so then you just like hang around with all your old mates and stuff like that and get blazed all day without taking the pharmaceutical medications and things like that that mean that you can't sleep and you drool and you do donuts in the parking lot in your wheelchair, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's something about that, you know, just that fellowship and that, you know, the band of brothers, you know, the people that have been out there, you know, going for it, you know, the big dogs that didn't stay on the porch but went out and ran in the tall grass.
And this is another thing about the tall grass, talking about, you know, the Christian issues as we are right now. I could just imagine the abuse that's going on right now just to the people. I'm so sorry. I don't mean to offend you. I only mean to tell you what I think is the truth. And I might be wrong. Jeff might be wrong. But however, at this point in study, this is just our opinion. And we've got a lot of evidence to back our opinions up if you want to look for it. But if you don't want to look for it, if you just want to deny it, if you just want to turn the show off, that's okay. Because you still heard it anyway. One day, it might sink in. One day you might go, you know, a lot of people said that. Vinny said it first, then Jeff said it, then somebody else, another person. Maybe one day the penny will drop and you'll realize that you've been going in the wrong direction your whole life for no reason other than somebody told you what the right direction was instead of telling you how to find the right direction for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Vinny, I just ask, everybody who's a Christian, ask yourself one question. I want to give you one factoid that will blow your mind. The New Testament, right? 27 books, and they were actually letters written to, you know, churches. 27 of them, and it's put together now in what we call the New Testament. Now, would it blow your mind, Vinny, if I told you that that book is put together with the chronological order of when those letters were written, completely, totally, 100% screwed up?
Well, let me get a massive historical document that turned out to be completely taken out of context. No, I never would have guessed that.
Well, you know, most people pick it up. They read Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. They think it started off with Matthew. That was the first book. The first book was really James. And here's the point. One guy put the New Testament together. His name was Polycarp. He knew which books were written first. Why did he mix up the whole order? Was he trying to hide something? Was he trying to prevent you from really understanding the flow and development of thought within the New Testament? Because here's the truth. If you read those books in their order, what you see is that the New Testament was, to use a modern term, a Twitter war between Jesus and his apostles and Paul and his followers. And that's the reason why the whole thing was twisted up. That's the reason why the whole thing is intentionally scrambled. And if you want to know the truth, if you really want to know the truth, Google New Testament books in correct chronological order. Go to my website and get the Diamond New Testament. Read them and then tell me what you think about what you think.
See, now that's an interesting one. Because I think well, somebody did that for Pulp Fiction as well. Somebody came out and said, oh, the Pulp Fiction storyline's all over the place at different times and things. And then somebody made a re-edit where it's in chronological sequence. And you've done that for the Bible.
I did not know that. But the question is, Vinny, why did it wait until, I think I did that in 2014. Why did it take until 2014 some long-haired ex-Pentecostal preacher to do it? Why didn't some theologian or scholar do it in the previous 2,000 years?
Because the world wasn't ready for it.
Ah, good answer.
You know, I mean, what is it? When you have the realization, the really brilliant idea, a calling, as it will, and you don't follow through on that calling, it's a bad move. Because you're actually meant to do it. You, the person who had the inspiration, who had the idea, you're actually meant to do it. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people get robbed of when they get into indoctrinated religious thinking, is they don't listen to their intuition that actually is tied into the universal flow that sends you signals, tells you things, and gets you to do them just by your own instinct. You know, I remember one time I was like, Vinny, what? Take down the washing. It's going to rain, bro. And I was like, I can't be bothered. I'm just going to go up to the flat and just sit down and maybe play a video game for an hour or something. It's going to rain, bro. You're going to get your washing wet. And I was like, you don't listen to yourself. And then, you know, as soon as I get in the door, it starts pissing down with rain. Stuff like that, if you're doing what you're meant to be doing, if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, if you're being who you really are, you'll get all those little ping, 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 you just this instinct to call someone, this instinct to send an email to someone, this instinct to help another person over here with this little thing. You'll have all these tiny little pings the whole time. That's when you know that you've actually tapped into the flow, bro. Okay, you won't be able to read your signals in a book.
Absolutely. And Vinny, every single person that's involved with organized religion, be it Judaism, be it Christianity, be it Islam, you know, those are the Abrahamic religions, I tend to stay with those. Every one of us that have been involved in that have been reading through the Bible and thought, huh, that doesn't make sense. That disagrees with what went over here. And you read a little bit more, wait a minute, that doesn't add up. And you go to the preacher, the priest, the pastor and say, how come this says this, but over here, and you get the answer of, oh, well, God moves in mysterious ways, or you don't have enough faith, or just put that on the shelf. And that's the bing, bing, bing of our spirit saying, hey, wait a minute, something's not right. And shame on me, Vinny. I got that first ping about 5 years into my career as a minister. But, you know, I got the ping in a house that was paid for by the church. I got the ping cashing a check that was written by the church. And I got the ping, you know, living with my wife and kids in, you know, church-funded housing. So I should have left when I got the first ping, but it took another 10 years of pings, and that was just my lack of integrity. But all of us are hearing those things. All of us are feeling those things, and it's showing us that there's something wrong. And it's not something wrong with the divine. It's not something wrong with God. It's something wrong with religion. And the question comes, how long Are you willing to not listen to yourself? And how long will it take you to get tired of looking at the reflection in the mirror of a person that's not being honest with themselves? That's the bottom line.
You'll be reminded, like all the time I get this, if I don't listen to my ping, I get reminded of why I should have. And then you get a chance to try again. You get another ping later on. Do you listen to it? Do you listen to it? No, you don't. Okay. You're going to repeat the process again and again and again until you start doing it. Essentially, the ping becomes a force that controls your life, not because you want it to, not because you submit to it, but because you know by experience that every single time that you followed the ping, something good has come out of it in a roundabout kind of way. Not right away, but in a different way somewhere else. It's kind of like you're building a house, but you start building it from the roof. You put the roof up first, and then you build your way down to the foundations. It's really strange like that. Nothing in the universe works in a logical way, and none of the pings that you get will explain themselves until after you've fulfilled what they've instructed you to do.
But Vinny, here's a question just popped into my head. If you don't listen to the pings for long enough, if you ignore the pings long enough, will they eventually stop coming?
Nah, they keep coming, but they also start punishing you, like with cancer.
Yep, I know what you mean. If the still, you know, the Bible talks about the still small voice. If the divine can't get your attention with the still small voice, the divine is not above taking the still small 2x4 and wielding it up against your head.
The longer you keep ignoring your destiny, the worse you will feel about yourself, the worse you will feel about your life. Now, it's funny that we should be talking about this because my bandmate came by earlier and he's like, dude, we need to practice the song we used to do. We need to practice this song. And I was like going over the lyrics and I said, they think it's just a game, but its truth is plain, that what's happening is real. And that fear that you feel is your motivation. It is the end of the long equation, the reason for your being. That's why you feel horrible. That's why you feel angry. That's why you feel afraid, because you're meant to be doing something about it.
Absolutely. I think it was Helen Keller that said most men, maybe it wasn't Helen Keller, but most men lead lives of quiet desperation. And my question is, why? And all I'm about, you know, the Christian whistleblower is about, is this. You have the right to believe in Pauline religion if you want to believe in Pauline religion. You also have the right to know that Yeshua taught a different doctrine that plays by different rules, so to speak. You have the right to choose one or the other, but I also believe that you have the right to know the difference and to have all the information at your disposal. I gave up a long time ago trying to convince people, trying to sell people on what they should do, where they should go, who they should be. All I'm in now is the information business. I want to give you all of the information. I want to get all the proverbial cards on the table so you can sit down and decide what works best for you. If I can make you think, if I can make you uncomfortable, my work here is done.
Yeah, that's another thing that I was talking to another guys today, and they said, how do you know if something's true, Vinny? And I was like, well, does it make you feel really uncomfortable? That is probably true. I know, it's like the truth's not a comforting thing, and it never has been. However, it's like exercise. It hurts. But you grow stronger the more of that pain that you endure, the more truth that you force yourself to accept, the more powerful you become.
Absolutely. But it's much easier to sit home and watch Arnold Schwarzenegger work out than it is to work out yourself, right? And it's much easier to sit in a pew and listen to a preacher, listen to a priest, than it is to actually get on the internet or pick up a book yourself and do your own research. And, you know, most people want to watch who's getting voted off the island or who's winning the singing contest. Most people, I mean, 2,000 years ago, it was different. We didn't have the information or access to the information. Today, The only reason for us to be uninformed is a lack of individual initiative. I know that hurts, but it's also true.
I've seen had so many truthers come to me saying, Vinny, what should I do? What should I do? Can you help me with this? Can you help me with that? And I was saying, dude, it's the first big mistake. You should be asking yourself that question. What can I do? And it's not a rhetorical question either. It's got an answer, right? You hear something really horrible that's going on in the world, and a lot of people go, oh, but what can I do? You know, and they get blasé about it. But they don't ask the question, so what can I do? You know, really sit there and contemplate about it. And that's when you know that you're disempowering somebody versus empowering them. I don't want to motivate people. I want to inspire them, because if I motivate them, as soon as they lose motivation, they'll need somebody to motivate them again. If I inspire them, they are their own motivator and they don't need me anymore. They are no longer dependent on me. They are independent. What kind of belief structure forces all of its followers to be dependent? A good one or a scumbaggery one?
I think we all know the answer to that, and you know, that's such a tremendous truth that you've explained there. And even when you look into the the quote unquote New Age movement, you know, people pat themselves on the back because, oh, I don't go to a church anymore, I don't listen to a pastor anymore, I don't listen to a priest anymore. But the same people trot down to a tarot reader, a psychic, angel guide, spirit guides, all of that stuff. And instead of listening to the pastor, now they're just listening to these spiritual workers, quote unquote, or they're just listening to these guides. And all they've done is gone from the frying pan to the fire, but it has this sense of false enlightenment. Just because you've left one cage and walked into another, that's really not progress. That's just a change of scenery. And until, as Vinny said, you start getting independent, you start asking yourself questions and start answering your own questions, it's only when you start being your own guru, when you start guiding your own spirit, when you start mastering your own ascension, that's when you really start to become an enlightened individual. And that's in the bottom line, that's what we all have to do, and no one can do it for us. It's just like working out. I can work out all day long and it's not going to help Vinny at all. Only when Vinny works out is it going to help Vinny. Only when Jeff works out is it going to help Jeff.
Now, I also think that this comes down to an important realization, is that we tell ourselves so many really good excuses why we shouldn't have to do this thing. No, I shouldn't have to figure out my own destiny. I want to go to a 9-to-5 job that I hate so I can earn money to go find somebody that I can pay that money to tell me what my destiny is, so that I can continue going to that job that I hate and not fulfilling my destiny. Is it a logical conclusion? No, it's not. It's because you're operating under some kind of brainwashed mechanism thingy that is disrupting your brain places with its feeder tendrils, okay? It's not going to work out very well for you, okay? Corporate America needs to be killed, all right? In a human sacrifice kind of way. You know, we need to cut out its beating heart and take bites out of it and, like, pass it around and stuff and like, use it as a water bong and stuff like that. It'll be great. But the thing is, in order to transition, this is something, a realization I was coming to, I saw it on a movie or something. It doesn't matter what your goal is. What matters is how you get there. Do you lose who you are in the process? Okay. Do you want to start a war so that you can dominate another region? Or do you want to fight the war at home and make sure your own people are safe and fed and educated and happy? That kind of thing. Do you want to take or do you want to give? Do you want to create or do you want to destroy? These are the choices that we make every day in really tiny little ways, so many that they become cumulative, kind of like how Congress passes a couple of laws a day and nobody even knows that they're even passing that many laws every single day, until one day there's a whole bunch of legislation that just gets thrown at you from out of the blue because you weren't paying attention, all right? so many bad things can happen to you when you're not paying attention. And I think that the reason why Hollywood and the media have become so over bloated, despite the fact that their audience numbers are tanking, their revenue is tanking, and yet they seem to be bigger and more flashy than ever. You know why? Because certain people are pouring a fuckload of money into those cunts, all right? And they are pumping them up like a big inflatable bouncy castle, bro. Honestly, there's nothing there. It's just empty space. And you know why they use that as a priority? Because TV and entertainment is the most effective method to distract you from fulfilling your destiny during your free time. All right, works perfect at distracting you from fulfilling your destiny, because you've got to work, you've got to make your money, you've got to have your honorable place in society. But as soon as you've got time to yourself, time to think, they need to stop you from doing that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you were right on something that I was thinking. A long, long time ago, a very famous preacher, I'd call his name, but it'd probably distract from our discussion. He told me, Jeff, there's two ways to have the biggest church in town. One way is to go out and tear down everybody else's church so yours is the only one left standing. The other way is to build a great church, build a church that serves people, build a church that helps the community. And if you just look at the Bible, about, you know, you were talking about tearing other people down, killing other people. Look at the God of the Old Testament. This was a God who consistently killed people. And he, at least on six occasions, said, I want you to go into this land, kill all the men, kill all the women, kill all the boys, kill all the girls, kill all the babies, kill all the animals. And what people don't realize is the God that gave, quote-unquote, Israel the quote-unquote promised land slaughtered all the people that were already there. And the God of the Old Testament has a record of bloodshed, destruction. His whole game was tearing down everybody else's church, quote unquote, so he could have the best one. That's what the Old Testament is all about. You come to the New Testament and Jesus comes on the scene and he says, wait a minute. We don't have to kill anymore. We don't have to shed blood anymore. What we're going to do is build our inner selves up. We're going to develop ourselves. The God of the Old Testament says, burn everything down so yours is the only one left standing. Jesus, Yeshua said, no, build something great that serves people and stands as a beacon to people. And people ask all the time, well, how can God be so one way in the Old Testament and so one way in the New Testament? He can't. It's two different dudes doing different deeds. And you get to choose which dude you want to align with.
The bloodthirsty, psychopathic, jealous scumbag, or the peace-loving, friendly guy who would probably pass you a joint.
Absolutely. And Vinny, the guy says, there's, I was just writing a book the other day, and there's about, I just listed about 27 scriptures and stopped, of the Lord, the God of the Old Testament, saying, I am a jealous God. I am a violent God. I don't even want a girlfriend like that, much less a God.
Now, if you were to go to a modern psychologist and you say, what do you call somebody who's really violent, selfish, envious, and aggressive, and kills people all the time and doesn't feel bad about it, and has a really high opinion of themselves? He'd call him a fucking psychopath, wouldn't he?
Is it a psychopath or sociopath? One of the two, but neither one is very very complimentary.
It's one's a tomato and one's a tomato, you know.
Exactly.
It's a pronunciation thing. What does it matter?
But the God of the Old Testament, Vinny, if we can get objective and look at it in an objective, and if we can get outside the paradigm and just look at it objectively, the God of the Old Testament is the original psychopath slash sociopath.
Now, there was a theory that these creatures came to Earth, right, from another planet, another solar system, another galaxy, wherever the fuck they came from. They did. And they brought something that the local inhabitants of Earth didn't have, scumbaggery, and they've ruled here ever since.
You know, the scumbaggery came from somewhere, and I don't know, we're probably capable of generating a pretty sufficient quantity of scumbaggery on our own. You know, but that gets to the whole thing. That if you look in the Bible in Genesis 1:1, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. You know, we think of a big guy with white hair and a big flowing beard. Not that I'm against guys with white hair and flowing beards, but that's the beginning of our entrance into the thought control matrix, when really the word is Elohim, which means gods and goddesses, male and female. So these Elohim came from somewhere because they created this earth here. I don't know where they came from. And if you read through in a logical, impartial, and literal way from the Hebrew to the English, what you see is that there was this number of Elohim. Some say there's seven of them. I can't really tell you with any certainty how many of them there were. But what is certain is that one of them decided that he didn't like what was going on, and he wanted to change the program, and he wanted to hijack the whole thing. And that one that is the inventor of scumbaggery, Jesus said he was the first murderer. Jesus said he was the first liar. And if you follow it through literally, if you follow it through empirically, if you follow it linguistically, if you follow through even the Gnostic writings and other teachings, that being, the Gnostics call him Yaldabaoth. Cyrus and the Nineveh cylinder that was discovered in Nineveh called him Marduk. The Old Testament calls him the Lord, Jehovah. That dude was the Elohim that invented scumbaggery and brought the scumbaggery down, and he's the killer, he's the murderer, he's the blood guy, he's the psychopath slash sociopath. And what Yeshua did was come on the scene and say, hey, wait a minute, have you had enough of the scumbaggery? I've got a different way. And then Paul was employed to bring the scumbaggery back, to make scumbaggery great again.
Yeah, I just got a great idea for a picture I want to have made up. It's like me as Jesus, my hands open and stuff like that, and the light behind me. Are you tired of scumbaggery? Well, I've got a better way.
There you go. There you go. Put that on a shirt. I'll buy one.
Yeah, well, it's like the savior complex as well. There's so many people in this movement who think they can save everybody. Yeah, I started off with that as well. Like going out, I can convince everybody that 9/11 is an inside job. You mean people who don't know the melting temperature of steel, Vinny? You mean the engineers who do know the melting temperature of steel but tell you you're crazy if you bring it up? You know, that kind of thing. The world doesn't work out the way you want it to sometimes. You don't always get what you want, but sometimes you get what you need, as the song lyric goes. Are we satisfied? Are we satisfying? We have desires. We have motivations. We have purpose. And I think that the main element that we look at here when we talk about the difference between this scumbaggery and what it means to be a good person, or rather the essence of the divine, is that concept of creativity and love, right? You got creativity. You can create new things that you aren't stealing from other people, and you can actually love people without having a payoff from it, or, you know, being paid to do it. That kind of thing. That's what we're talking about. That's what you need. And again,
absolutely
need to keep repeating this to people, because apparently repetition's a form of mind control and it helps things sink in a little bit. I'm telling that to a guy who's read the Bible 200 times. And the thing about this is, if you're not paying attention to what people are trying to convince you of, if you're not questioning them at the same time that they're trying to convince you of something or whatever, then you've got your guard down, all right? And sometimes an open mind is like a fortress with its gates unbarred and unguarded, and it'll allow a whole lot of lies to slip through. But if you're not willing to defend the truth when it comes to it, to sacrifice of yourself for the truth because it is needed at the time. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back after the break with Jeff Doherty. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. This is hour number two, baby. Oh, yeah. We got Jeff Doherty on. It's really, really good to actually be with someone. It's quite funny. During the break, me and Jeff both popped out to do whatever it was we did respectively. And then I came back to check something on the computer at the exact same time that Jeff came back to check something. And then we both went back to doing whatever it was we were doing. In sync, yo. In sync. All right? Like Justin Timberlake. And the thing I wanted to, again, reiterate, and I've got to make this a habit for the starts of the shows, really, is asking for your financial support, ladies and gentlemen. Going to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, clicking on that donate banner, we have a couple of computers. I'm totally out of breath. I ran to the studio from the, from the kitchen. All right, and it's really important all the time to have that regular funding coming in from the audience, right? Now, you know that when you don't have enough money to pay your bill that's due, right, that there's going to be money right there at the point that it's due, right? To a large degree, that's what happens. However, if you don't have that money ahead of time, it means from the time you receive that bill to the time that bill is actually paid, you get something that's really painful. It's called anxiety. You know what anxiety causes, ladies and gentlemen? A whole lot of really nasty ill health effects, causes depression. And, you know, basically it messes up your workload as well. So because we all really have to work quite hard to bring you these radio shows, to keep the network online, it would really be nice if you would show us a bit of dedication signing up for $10 a month. You know, is that too much to ask? What about $500 a month? Can you spare that? Do you have $5,000 that you don't actually really, really need? And you have this instinct that, you know, I want to do something good with this, but I don't know what to do. Give it to American Freedom Radio. Give it to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Give it to the people who are making this world a better place. The people who are provably doing it, day by day, in every single way. The people who are proven to be reliable and honest over time. Sometimes it takes a few years of listening and watching somebody before you have any idea who the hell they are. And sometimes they stay true and they don't sell out. And you need to support those kind of people because they're the kind of people who won't try to sell you fear in order to get money out of you. They'll only give you inspiration. Jeff Doherty, welcome back.
And let me just say amen to that, Benny.
Yeah, ironically. Hey, and speaking of amen, is it related to Amon-Ra, the Egyptian god?
Well, I think it would have to be. I mean, it's not something that I think... You don't see Jesus saying it. So it's. I think it's, you know, we get into a whole new discussion. But when you think about the things that religion does, you walk up to a church, you see a building with a steeple, you see a cross, you go into the church, you see all of, you know, the stained glass, and depending on what kind of church you're in, you see the statues. And, you know, it's everything's being communicated in symbols, and there's a reason why that the church communicates in symbols the same way McDonald's and Coke and Pepsi do, because symbols have tremendous powerful meaning, and symbols can go right through your conscious mind and make a very strong imprint in your subconscious mind. And when you start repeating things that are being said from the front of the church and you start repeating in unison, start saying amen, again, you're doing things that are very psychologically imprinting to you. So it's getting you back into the whole thing. So yeah, I'm sure it is part of that. I wanted to say one thing before I forgot, Vinny, that you talked about before we went to the break. This whole concept of somebody saving you. The fact of the matter is, there's no one coming back to save you. Your ship is not coming in. You have to swim out to meet it. You have to save yourself. But it's not because no one cares about you, but the reality is that you don't need saving. Religion, Pauline religion, Old Testament religion teaches that you're filled with original sin. And that means that you got to go to the guys that have the golden tickets to keep you from going to the bad place so you can go to the good place. But Jesus said, no, wait a minute. You don't have original sin. You've got the spark of divinity within. And it's not about fear and doubt and worry. Can I do enough? Can I be good enough for long enough to be able to make it? You've got the spark of divinity within you. And this life is not to be worried and fearful of not making it. Jesus said he wants to give you peace that passes all understanding. He wants you to live an abundant life. And ask yourself, what does your religious experience bring you? Does it bring you fear, worry, doubt? Or does it bring you peace? And if you're not living in that peace and you're not living in that abundance, I would say you might want to consider the way that Yeshua laid out. No one's coming back to save you because you don't need to be saved.
Well, you can save yourself. What was it, that joke? There was a dude who was trapped on a roof in New Orleans during the flood. Yeah. And he prays to God, God, please save me. Please save me, God. You know, I've been a good Christian for a really long time. I've given plenty of money to the donation plate. God, save me. And these dudes turn up in a rowboat. They say, hey, bro, jump in the boat. We'll row you to safety. And he goes, no. God's going to save me, bro. And so they're like, all right. And they row off. And he goes, God, why haven't you saved me? He prays again. God, please save me. Save me, God. I'm stuck here. I need help. And a Coast Guard boat comes by with twin engines on it, rolling through the street. I said, bro, jump in the boat. We'll save you. And he goes, no. God will save me. You know, it's just this whole thing. You can pay attention to the world around you, or you can tell, or you can ask somebody else to tell you their interpretation for something you can see for yourself. All right, it's right there. Reality is right there. You can reach out literally and grab it. You're in a three-dimension universe with fifth-dimensional consciousness that you can translate that through work, through your hands, your eyes, your fingers, your thoughts, into something that can actually affect others in the 3D universe that had no direct physical contact with the object that you're talking about in your own mind's eye that you saw before it even existed, right? That's power. Whoever is controlling society doesn't want you to realize that you've got that power, right? And the reason why is because they're jealous, because they don't. They can only steal it from you if you allow them to.
Absolutely. Now, Vinny, why do you think that people within the truth movement can see and understand and buy the notion that there's people in government that are trying to steal their power? There's people in culture that are trying to steal their power. There's people that in the financial realm that are trying to steal their power. There's people socially that are trying to steal their power. But why is it so unthinkable that there might actually be people within the religious structures that are also trying to steal their power? Why can't that loop, that circle be created so we can realize that it's all one control system? Why can't people go there?
There's one group within that that are maybe they're an anomaly. Maybe this is the good reason for that anomaly. But they are at their wit's end. They are going to kill themselves, or they're doing something really, really bad, evil with their lives, and they decide to convert and they stop doing all these evil things all of a sudden. Right? And the reason why they felt that they had the power is because somebody told them that the power of Jesus is within you, and if you wish it, if you ask for that power, if you pray for it, that power will be given to you to do the right things. Now, what's interesting is that that is an incredibly positive experience. Wouldn't say that religion is very bad for that person, especially because without that injected religion, they would have continued doing bad things. However, what the person who told them to pray to was anthropomorphized as Jesus. I believe that power of Jesus per se actually does reside in everybody, with or without thinking that it's Jesus that gives you that power. However, there's another point to this, which is the interesting thing. The reason why I believe in our God as a macro organism, that comprises all the little lower organisms, kind of like how my cells make me up. I'm a god to them, and there's a bigger organism that I'm a cell to. Yeah, link in the chain, as it were, up and down infinitely. There's tiny little cells within them, so on. But the thing about this is, if you don't have a belief in God, and this was found in statistics from Vietnam prisoner of war camps, the atheist soldiers that were locked away in prisoner of war camps with no hope of rescue died in overwhelming numbers. The really strong Christians, on the other hand, had really, really high survival rates. It's because when they were alone in that cell with no hope of rescue, they weren't alone and they weren't without hope, ever, because they had their belief. And I believe that that is the essence of why you believe in something higher than yourself. Because if you believe in something higher than yourself and you believe that it's there for you, just believing that there's something big and something that's there and something to keep you company will help you survive things that you can't ordinarily survive, will help you do things that you couldn't ordinarily do. That's why religion is such a powerful draw card, because it has the ability to awaken those powerful potentials within people. And because it has that ability, it has also the ability to manipulate people using those powers.
That's profound. That really is. I was sitting here thinking about my own life when you were sharing that story. And I wasn't, a killer or anything of that nature, but I was doing some things I didn't want to do. And when, quote unquote, Jesus came into my life, I was able to turn that around and keep it turned around. And yeah, there is something to be said for the efficacy of religion. There's something to be said for, there's a lot of changed lives. There's a lot of lives that have been turned around from doing, things that the person thought were horrible, and the person no longer doing those things. And like you said, it was externalized in this form of this Jesus. And I happen to agree with you at what you were saying with the whole cell thing, as above, so below. I totally agree with you on that. And I guess my point is, being rather rambling made, but if religion that has the potential to be manipulative and controlling has that much power, how much more power does a what Jesus called pure religion and undefiled have to make changes in people's life? If what I would call a religion that's not from Jesus has power like that, what about the one that is from Jesus? How much more power could that potentially have? And isn't it at least worth a look, maybe?
Well, we're talking about creating the perfect society, but the funny thing about perfection is it's unknowable.
That's right.
All right, so those who try to create the perfect society are like those who try to endlessly vaccinate you into being free of disease.
Absolutely. It's crazy. One of my buddies, Scotty Roberts, has a slightly off-color saying. He says, the more shit I know, the more I realize I don't know shit.
Hey, there's a good saying. It's it's an amalgamation. I think many great people have said these things, and I think maybe the earliest one was Aristotle, and he says, "I am a wise man, and what makes me a wise man is I know that I know nothing."
Ah, much more eloquent than my buddy Scotty's rendition.
Hey, well, did you know that the Bible has been translated into many, many languages, including street? All right. Street philosophy. All right. Think about this. Because the New World Order has dumbed down everybody with progressive education and mass media and so on and so forth, all the ways. We've got the ability now, because their attention spans are so small and they're so easy to manipulate, we can actually create tiny little weaponized information particles that you can put around, like memes, for example. Have you noticed that in the age of a really small attention span, incredibly well thought out, small philosophical sayings in a picture format have become inexhaustibly popular? And I think it's because people are actually crying out for it. They want it. And this is why I make memes all the time, to make people laugh, but also to make them think. And part of the reason why you have to make them laugh with a meme is because it cuts through the fear. When was the last time you were scared out of your mind and laughing your ass off at the same time?
Impossible.
Impossible. Okay, so when you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen, how many times are you laughing your ass off? Reasonably, you know, a couple of times, maybe during an hour or per se. We have a really shitty pun in there, whatever. But and how many times are you just really scared shitless? And you go, oh my God, what do I do? What do I do? Never, never. Okay, this is what I learned in sales. If you say what you're saying with a smile on your face and with a kind demeanor, you can tell people the most horrible and stupid things, and they'll walk away from it feeling good about it. Okay, now we live in a really horrible, stupid, stupid world, and it's made this way by horribly stupid people, right? And by that, I'm not talking about the ordinary people who are manipulated by psychopathic scumbags. I'm talking about the psychopaths themselves. They're the only people who are actually really stupid, because they only want a couple of things out of life, and none of those things have any value. Money, sex, and power. You know what the only thing that has value, the only thing you can't replace once you lose it, the only thing you don't know the true value of until it's gone? People. Right? It's the only thing that ever has mattered and or ever will matter. Nothing else does. If you've got a shitload of money and a hell of a lot of power and all the pussy you could ever possibly magnate at a gargantuan brothel of Game of Thrones proportions, okay, you wouldn't be as happy as somebody who had good friends that they could trust, a good family who they love and can have a laugh around a meal with. You see, because the person who appears on the outside to have everything is usually the person on the inside with nothing.
That is so profound. And I was sitting here thinking, and just let me share this with you and with the great American Freedom Radio audience. Whether it's your job, whether it's your relationship, whether it's your church, you know, whether it's your religion, stop and think about what Vinny just said. Does this thing in my life, what type of feelings does it create in me? Does it create fear? Does it create worry? Does it create guilt? Does it create stress? Or does it create peace? Does it create enjoyment? Does it create relaxation? Does it empower me? And I think that I'm not going out too far on a limb to say if you would take the things that breed fear and doubt and worry and guilt and control in your life and get rid of those, you might be a lot more happier. And plus, it would give you time to spend with the things that bring love and joy and peace and happiness and fulfillment into your life. A radical suggestion, I know, but one that you might want to try. I don't know about you, Vinny, but I think that might make a little bit of sense.
Well, I like to use analogies because I'm pretty anal about my analogies and my and my analysis. The thing is, it's like a stain on the carpet. Every time you walk past it, it kind of pisses you off. And it might actually be a real pain in the ass to pour some baking soda and some lemon juice on that puppy and then scrub it with a little bit of elbow grease. Okay? Might be a pain in the ass. But once you do it, you'll walk past that carpet not feeling annoyed every time you see it, okay? And it's like that with everything in your life. Hey, there's this person who's supposedly my friend who I can't stand the sight of and kind of really hate that they're hanging around my house all the time and smoking my weed. I don't want this person around anymore, bro. All right, see, again, listen to your pings. Is this making me a better person? Is this making me happy? And the thing is, you'll notice, though, that you go through withdrawals from scumbaggery, okay? Mind control's addictive, and we're all subjected to it on a certain level. And if you want to know if you're under mind control currently, right now, it'll be if you've never questioned whether or not you're currently under mind control, okay? That's how you can tell. And I believe that if you're cognizant to the fact that there's somebody else who's told you how to think, told you what the truth is, and that you suddenly now have to find out for yourself, you're talking about going from the ages of, say, 7 years old to about the ages of 21. In some cases, it'll take people up to the ages of 40, 60 sometimes. People are waking up at all different points in their life. But however long it took you to wake up and then suddenly start living within your own power, there's going to be a certain amount of withdrawal from all that you used to love and hold dear, which had no real value. And you'll go through the typical grief process. First, you're going to deny it. All right, you're going to deny that there is a new world order. You're going to deny that you've been wasting your life on a fruitless dream and cockamamie bullshit that some scumbags made up to funnel you into a human meat grinder. Okay, it's not a very nice thing. And it's not like if somebody just tells you about it earlier in life, you'll get over it. Oh, sorry, Jimmy, but actually this ruthless criminal sociopathic Illuminati satanic pedophile cult's running the world right now. Would you like some milk with your cornflakes? You know, you can't just insert it in there in a calm way. It's going to rob you of a lot of your comfort. All right, so, you know, not to contradict you, Jeff, but there was the thing about, does it make you happy? Does it make you good? Sometimes, if you believe in bullshit, your body will have a natural reaction to it, this cognitive dissonance. And if you know you're going through it, you can spot it. How do you know if one of your beliefs is bullshit and you're having a hard time accepting it? When somebody brings it up and you get angry with them all of a sudden, it's because your body knows it's true, even if your mind refuses to believe it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I remember when I was realizing that a lot of what I, you know, believed in, and, you know, keep in mind, here's a guy that, you know, went to Bible college. Here's a guy that, you know, had spent 15 of his, you know, arguably best years, you know, years of my youth as a preacher. And I'm starting to realize that it's all a scam. I'm starting to realize there's these cracks in the foundation of big time religion that I've been serving. And the things that go through your mind are like, but how could I be the only one to see this? You know, how could Billy Graham be wrong? How could all these Bible college professors be wrong? How could all these books about the Bible be wrong? How could all these churches be wrong? How can all this be wrong and only I be right? How can my ping really be right? But sooner or later, you've got to come to that place where you just decide, you know what? I can't live a life that is not based on integrity anymore. I can't do things that I don't want to do anymore, that I don't feel good doing anymore. You know, you weren't in sales very long, so you maybe never had to sell something you didn't really believe in. I've been in those places where I had to leave. There comes a time where you just can't do something that saps your integrity any longer. You just can't support a system that's false anymore. You just can't support a system that doesn't empower you anymore. And you just can't be a part of something that is not good and helpful. And you just finally get to the point where no matter what it costs you, you know, there's an old saying that says there's nothing more dangerous than a person with nothing to lose. When you become that person with nothing to lose, that's when you really, truly become powerful, if you will act and step out on that ping and take that initiative and say, you know what, I'm going for it no matter what.
Now, those experiences are also very empowering because it can remind you of how strong you actually are, that I can have everything taken away from me, everything I ever held dear, survive it, and then create something new and better to replace it, okay? It's like the carpet analogy before, but what if the entire house is filthy, all right? Now, sometimes you can save it. You know, you can clean the whole house and it's going to take you a long time. It's going to be a real pain in the ass, but you'll still be in the same house. It'll just be a hell of a lot better. It'll be a hell of a lot different. You'll have that kitchen you want. You'll have that deck space you want with the rain cover so that you can sit outside with the smokers where all the good conversations happen without getting pissed on by the fucking elements of New Zealand. Okay, there's these things that can happen for you to improve your life. However, there are other things, on the other hand, which cannot be done, undone, right? Like we're talking about a termite-infested house, okay? Like this puppy has been eaten to the core. There is nothing left. And it's literally you have to just control demolition that puppy and just rebuild it from the ground up. And it's really sad. I went through that process after getting arrested for weed in New Zealand, right? And lost everything, lost all my friends, lost all my money, lost all my equipment, and all my computers and stereo and my life, you know, gone. And it was only a couple of years afterwards I realized that had those things not been taken from me, I wouldn't have had the motivation to do what was really right. I wouldn't have had the motivation, and I wouldn't have had the confidence to know that if I can survive that, I can survive giving up my job. I can survive being an activist for a living. I can survive doing this, blah, 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 blah. That's the thing. Who was it that said this? I think it was Dean Clifford I was speaking to. He told me about Biodome. You know what Biodome is, bro? Like they try
I
to
do.
So for those who don't know, Biodome was an enclosed ecosystem under a dome. All right, Biodome. Pretty straightforward, right? All the trees and everything in there that should be perfect to simulate how the Earth keeps its atmosphere, etc. Now, what was strange is that they noticed that once all the trees grew to a certain size, they would start to have their limbs snap off, or the trunks would break under their own weight. Why? Why out in nature did that not happen when in the dome it did? It's because the dome was a gilded cage with no wind to batter you, nothing to oppose you, to make you stronger, to make you be able to carry your own weight. And that is what society has become. It's become a gilded cage that makes us weaker, and it is breaking under its own weight. We need to feel pain. We need to feel suffering. We need to feel loss. We need to feel depression. And we need those things, because if we didn't have those sensations, we wouldn't realize that something was wrong, and we wouldn't have the motivation to change it.
And yet so few of us are willing to volunteer for those type of things. And while you were speaking, it reminded me of King David, the Bible king. He said something very similar to what you were saying. He, after this great thing happened to him, this horrible trial, he said, "The thing I feared most has come upon me, and yet I live." And I remember myself, year 2000, my wife announces that she's leaving with my piano player. In the denomination I was in, if you get divorced, you have to quit for 3 years. I still got to eat. I still got kids, but I'm out of a job. I'm sitting in I went to Hawaii to, you know, I figured if I was going to be miserable, I'd be miserable in Hawaii. And I'm sitting in this condo with beer bottles all around me and cigar butts all around me. Maybe I should have been smoking weed, Vinny. I don't know. But I just realized that, and I looked like Job. I looked up to God and I said, even though you kill me, I'm still going to trust you. And sometimes when you get on the other side of the worst thing that's ever happened, I realize now that was the best thing that ever happened to me. It was that moment, that experience that transformed my life. And I've said many times that God was more interested in my life than he was in my marriage. And, you know, whether you believe that or not, things do come into your life to show you how strong you are. And when you have been through what you think in King David's terms or in Vinnie Eastwood terms, the worst thing that you could ever imagine has come upon you, and yet you live, man, there comes a confidence with that. There comes it's empowering when you realize, hey, man, I have been there. There's nothing else the world can throw at me. There's nothing else the world can do to me. I am 10 feet tall and bulletproof. The thing I fear most has come upon me, and I live. There's nothing more dangerous, and there's nothing more powerful than a man or a woman with nothing to lose, and even more, one that's already lost it and has lived to tell the story and is now ready to go do the deed.
Well, that's because if other people are broken around you, you can say, hey, bro, don't kill yourself. Don't think that everything's lost. You may feel like that. You may feel really bad right now. You may think that your family's against you because they think that you've gone crazy, that you've changed your life direction, and that they feel like ashamed of you. But even though you lose your friends, even though you lose your family, sometimes permanently, you find yourself. Okay. You find yourself at the end of that. It's really lonely sometimes. When you are alone, and I got a taste of this over the weekend, like my wife, I'm very dependent on my wife, and I'm just like, she's very dependent on me. You know, it's called codependency. But when she left for the weekend, she wanted me to mow the lawn and do the dishes. I didn't want to mow the lawn. I didn't want to do the dishes. But what I did want to do is clean up a whole bunch of other stuff around the house and all the different rooms and things like that. These little things were really pissing me off, moving things into particular directions, arranging things and cleaning up old filth and dusting. And, you know, all these little things that she didn't notice when she got back. And so she was really angry with me. And we had this bit of a fight and all that kind of thing. And then we made up. And suddenly we realized that, hey, it didn't actually matter. Because when I was by myself, I was no longer dependent. And I had to force myself to clean up a whole bunch of things that shouldn't be done, even though I didn't do what my partner told me to do. Because I was choosing to be too independent, right? Now,
right.
When we get down to that sort of thing, am I choosing to be too independent? Am I choosing to phase people out? Am I choosing to do my own thing? Is that good because I'm making my own decisions and I'm not under the control of anybody? Or is that in some cases bad because you're actually abandoning your own social responsibilities, things that you're actually supposed to be doing? Now, this is something I found that should be contemplated by people in the media. I was about to say the people in the media like me, but there's nobody like me. It's just not going to happen, bro. Okay? I am the Bruce Lee of talk radio, all right? I can throw a bowl of rice in the air and catch one of the grains as it comes down with a pair of chopsticks on that fucking gun, all right? And this thing about it is you get overconfident and you get this hubris or whatever, and you think that you can survive anything, and you do think that you're bulletproof, and then something will happen and fuck your life up again. Hey, ow, you poked me in the eyeball, bro. What did you do that for? It's because you took your eye off the ball. That's why I poked you in the eyeball.
It's a constant experience. I mean, growth is a constant experience, and it's so difficult to develop the discipline to, I mean, yes, you're glad that you overcame. Yes, you're glad that you had a victory, but you can't win tomorrow's battles. You can't win today's battles with the strength from yesterday's victories. Every day you got to start over. You got to start at zero, and you've just got to keep going and keep growing and realize how much progress you've made, and, you know, understand that and recognize that. But again, it's a whole thing about, yeah, you may know some shit, but you still don't know shit really. So keep, you know, pat yourself on the back for what you've done, but keep on going because there's more to do. It's almost contradictory. It's a balance and it's a process, and
it's cosmic really more irony. Than
it is. It
Everything
is.
Has to be cosmically ironic, in my opinion. Otherwise, it can't be true.
You know, that is, I couldn't argue with that. And it's almost like, you know, we're like, it's like contradictory. But unless you have to be in it to understand it.
Well, what was it, that Star Wars thing about only a Sith deals in absolutes, right? Which is in of itself an absolutist statement, is it not? All right.
It is.
Now, that's, if you really think about it, that's actually what duality is. Making an absolutist statement about making absolutes absolute. You see? Doing it around again is the only way to keep the cycle going. It's the only way for balance to be ensured. I watched a Justice League animated film. I think it was called Justice League War. And it's when the characters first meet for the first time, and I think it was Green Lantern talking to Batman, And a whole bunch of the citizens, even though they were trying to save them from this creature, etc., were really angry at these superhero costume thugs and everything like that. Green Lantern was to Batman, and he says, why did they hate us? You know, it's like we're trying to save them, we're trying to do the right thing for them. And Batman says, it's necessary. All right, and he doesn't elaborate. And he didn't need to, because the people who you think are there to save you, the people who are supposed to be helping you, always need to have suspicion cast upon them and need to cast suspicion upon themselves, lest they be led astray and lead others astray. That's what I think it meant.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I sit here listening to that, it's so true. That's why, I mean, I know you say this and I say this, you know, when I speak somewhere or when I'm on the radio, you know, you don't take my word for it. Taking my word for it is no better than taking anybody else that's living and breathing's word for it. And, you know, I say it a million times, but you've got to be your own guru. You've got to guide your own spirit. You've got to quit jobbing out your enlightenment. You've got to quit giving away or looking for someone to lead you. You've got to lead yourself. And if you are a leader or if you are someone that's speaking to people, I think, you know, I come down hard a lot of times in some of these workers in the New Age movement because, you know, their whole profit structure is set up that someone has to come to them, you know, every 2 weeks or every month or something for a reading or for a session or for this or for that. And this is just me speaking editorially, but if I can't teach somebody to do what I do for them, and I do some spiritual services, if I can't teach people to do what I do for them for themselves within 3 to 6 months, then I probably ought to stop doing it because I'm not really good enough. We've got to break the cycle of dependency. And as people that are out there, quote unquote, leading, we can't be people that breed a cycle of dependency. It's tough, and again, you get in that whole balance, that whole contradiction. But man, we've just got to realize if we're going to empower people, we can't be creating dependency upon us, and we can't start to look at ourselves as having possessed all knowledge and having achieved everything. We've just got to keep going and keep growing, man.
Well, something that Robert Kiyosaki said, he said that the best kind of manager is somebody who can be brought into a company, set up a system that makes his ability to manage them completely obsolete, and then he's out of the job. That's what a manager is supposed to do, is make themselves redundant. And that is exactly what you're kind of describing here. Now, I try to do this for activists. Like, I remember Lisa Eyre from the Awareness Party here in New Zealand. She said, Vinny, can I pay you $50 to edit this one thing on my website? And I go, sure, give me the $50, but let's do it on Skype. Let's do it on Skype, and I'm going to teach you how to do it for yourself so that you never have to pay anyone again. Okay, how about that? And I spent maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. You know, my time would probably be worth maybe $200 an hour if I actually really had to think about how much value my time has at this age, about 30 years old. I think my time's worth about $200 an hour for what I can achieve with a computer and what I can bring to people with a conversation in terms of consulting, right? But I don't charge people because I don't have to. That's why I ask for people's regular donations and things of that nature, because then it makes marketing redundant. If people are donating to you whether or not you get out of bed in the morning, you have the motivation to get out of the bed in the morning and do some work anyway because it's fun. You actually like to do it. That's why it's interesting, though. People don't want to make that kind of commitment. Do they, Jeff? I mean, people make one-off donations to things far more often than they would make a scheduled regular monthly or weekly donation to things. But those scheduled monthly or weekly donation things, they make the difference week to week. And the one-offs, mate, they make the difference day to day. It's really strange when you think about it like this, how a symbiotic relationship about how different people give you their money and what way that they do it has a direct impact upon how much work you can produce in the way that you produce it. If you haven't got enough coin in your bank accounts, again, as I've got to stress this to people, causes anxiety not having any coin, doesn't it? All right, you get in fights with your relatives and so on and so forth on the phone because they're telling you to get a personal loan and you don't want one. What you want is just a little bit of a government handout in the form of people taking social responsibility, personal social responsibility, for ensuring the survival of a platform like American Freedom Radio by going out, working a slave job for scumbags who you fucking hate, and then coming by and then donating to the people who expose the scumbags who you fucking hate, all right? You know? Just kind of like how I make all this stuff with Apple products that's made by slave labor as I expose the slavery scumbaggery industrial complex, you know? Cosmic irony. Got to be true. Go to American Freedom Radio, go to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and start donating regularly, folks. We really, really do value your support, and we love legal tender. Okay, that stuff is really fantastic. Do you have any idea the kind of shit you can buy with legal tender? Did you know? Oh, who was it? It was Ken O'Keefe. Name me one thing you can't buy if you're a billionaire.
I can't think of one.
Exactly. You know, so I would say maybe you couldn't buy the Eiffel Tower. You know? Oh, really? We're not going to sell it. We're not going to sell it. Really? What if I donate $1 billion to your re-election campaign? Huh? See? Yes, yeah, suddenly we've got a commemoration ceremony for the Eiffel Tower to say the wonderful donors to Paris, etc., etc. And meanwhile, in the backroom deal, the bastard's got the lease on it! And he's leasing it back to the city council of Gay Perry! All right.
Now, somebody would argue you can't buy love, but with $1 billion, you could certainly rent a very close approximation of it.
Well, that was actually a line from, I think it was Planet Terror, Robert Rodriguez and Quentin's film. Money can't buy love, but you can rent it by the hour.
But I'll tell you this, Benny. I can tell you absolutely, positively, for certain, by way of experience, it is a whole lot easier to raise money when you can say, if you don't give, God is going to get you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't give to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, David Rockefeller will get you.
There you go.
Hey, and that's actually not too much of a lie, because David Rockefeller's actually real, and he has real schemes and real plans that are being exposed, in part, on this show. All right, so if you don't donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the Rothschilds will get you.
Like you said, that's not too far from the truth.
Yeah. If you don't donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the statists will get you. If you don't donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the right-wing Christian mafia will get you.
They're after me anyway. They're going to take their best shot.
Yeah, yeah. Hit me with your best shot. Unfortunately, those Gideon Bibles make fairly damaging projectiles.
absolutely. You know, you asked me a question right at the very beginning, talking about does Christianity work for God or does Christianity work for Satan? And I think I just wanted to make sure that I shared this with you and with your audience. When you're talking about Satan, you know, we've got a certain understanding of what Satan is. You know, some people think of a guy with a pitchfork and a pointy tail and a red suit. Somebody just think of this, you know, this heinous boogeyman type of being. But if you're talking about what Jesus said, and if you're talking about the literal New Testament, this concept of Satan, it's really Satan, which is the negative, egotistic, loathsome part of ourselves. And in the New Testament, when they're talking about Satan, it's really the Satan, and specifically when Jesus is talking about Satan, he's talking about the Satan, and he talks about the adversary. And the adversary is basically just the dude that is against the deeds that Jesus is trying to do. So if you're talking strictly biblical, strictly New Testament, strictly from the literal translation, Satan, the adversary, the devil, is really just the dude that is infringing and trying to stop the deeds of Jesus, and we've talked about this before. If you go back to the Old Testament, that dude is very easily identifiable. It's the Lord, it's Yahweh, it's Jehovah, it's Yaldabaoth of the Gnostic text. And you've really got Jesus and his adversary, and it's a choice between, you know, the God and the devil. Well, yes, but no, it's really between the ways and truths and lives as that Jesus identified and the religion of his adversary, which really is the Satan, which really is Satan. So it's not really
in a way,
boogeyman
it's kind of,
thing.
The philosophy is sort of like, so I'll do it my way, you do it Yahweh. And in New Zealand, with the hole in the ozone layer, you can get a Satan in 15 minutes.
Perfect. But I'm bum.
Oh, God. I kill me. Fuck, I'm good. All right. All right. So I wanted to get kind of serious about this in terms of the religious topics and the Bible study and that kind of thing. Do you actually have favorite passages, right? Because you know how we talked about that you can find a lot of really good truths in there in amidst some of the manipulations, and then on top of that there's the structural deformity of a hierarchical right. structure that gets everybody to believe the same thing so that they can be milked for money and power, etc. So what in the Bible contradicts the current way Christianity is being run by the churches?
Are you asking me what in the Bible contradicts?
Yeah, like the way the church is being run now, corrupt, et cetera, are there any like favorite passages of the Bible that you've seen that actually kind of expose exactly what's going on in the church right now?
Well, the very first thing that got me realizing something is afoul in the state of Denmark, if you will, is I read how Jesus, you know, respected women, held women in high esteem. Mary Magdalene was actually called the apostle to the apostles. So, I mean, Jesus was all about, you know, letting ladies have equality. John the apostle went out of his way to identify that there were ladies that led congregations. And I looked at this and I'm like, wow, this is good stuff. I mean, this is empowering equality. I read in the Elohim, you know, the Elohim, there were gods and goddesses, male and female. And I thought, you know, this is good stuff. Then I get over and I start reading Paul. And Paul says that a woman should not even be allowed to speak in church. And if she opens her mouth, it is a shame that a woman should never, ever be able to have any authority over a man, that a woman should stay at home doing housework and never come out of the house, that a woman should never, ever be in a place of authority, and that, by the way, it was really women that caused the quote-unquote fall and not men, and that the only reason women are really created was to meet the sexual needs of men. That's all in the New Testament. And that was the first thing that made me think, wow, something is different between what Jesus taught and believed and what Paul taught and believed. And I had to say, which way do I want to go? I got three daughters. I've got three granddaughters. So to live in, to support a structure that is so derogatory towards women, I just can't do it anymore, Benny.
Yeah. And that was another thing I thought about over the break. I didn't mention it. Remember we talked before about what a real Christian is, right? And I brought up the example of Ian Wishart. Another example is Catherine Albrecht. Right, you heard of the work? Oh man, she does spychips.com. It's just like exposing how they want to put RFID chips in everyone. And she created a new search engine called startpage.com, so you could search for stuff on there and they wouldn't keep any records on you for Google to siphon off, you know, that kind of thing. When you empower people to take the religious teachings and run with it and actually apply them, suddenly they're no longer within the controls of the church, and you'll find out that a lot of them actually leave the church and go and do spiritual work outside of it that the church doesn't really like, you know?
Absolutely.
Because the church isn't really about giving you freedom and fundamentally changing things. It's about fundamentally keeping things the same and stable and supporting the status quo. Fuck the status quo, man. I mean, what's it? To a large degree, everything in a generation, everything that people were familiar with will go away or change radically so that it's virtually non-recognizable. If you were plopped here, Jeff, right now, and you missed the ensuing 30 years, like if you, in 1986 you were suddenly transported to here and you got people were doing video calling and stuff like that, the kind of stuff we had in Star Trek, you'd be like, whoa, we're in the future, baby. But because it came on slow, it appears like it's natural, isn't it? And I think that's what religion was originally designed to do, as a weaponized domesticator of the population, so that they will change really, really slowly and gradually, so it's not too rapid, and that way everything sort of remains the same as it gets different. Now, in my opinion, that's a blessing and a curse. Stability is good for the economy, but it ain't really good for all the homeless people that the economic, military, industrial complex creates, is it?
No, it's not.
All right, so... Again, with that cosmic irony thing, if it doesn't contradict itself, it doesn't make sense. So in a way, the contradictions that are there in the Bible also make a lot of sense, right? Not talking about, you know, let's be sexist towards women. So like my wife, for example, she wants to stay home. She actually wants to cook, and she has that natural thing, you know. She wants to raise kids and things like that, like a more traditional woman. Now, I didn't tell her to do that. She wants that for herself. Did somebody else tell her that that's what she wants? I'm not sure, but she wants it, and she's not being forced into wanting it, and she hasn't been told that not wanting it is an evil thing that she'll be punished in the afterlife for.
And that's the whole thing, Benny. It's not really about, I'm not about driving people's end result. I remember when I was a preacher, I was an evangelist. I was the guy that would go to church 1 or 2 weeks, you know, rant and rave and get people saved, get people healed, cast out demons, all that stuff. I was trying and working with all I could to get people saved. And I realized, you know, obviously, God tapped on my shoulder and said, hey, wait a minute. If people do things just because you tell them to do it, that's not good enough. I, God says, want people to do things because it's something they have realized and decided within themselves. So I'm not trying to drive your results. I'm not trying to drive anybody's results. All I'm trying to do is get people to stop, wait a minute, consider the actions that they're taking. Consider what they're giving their power, their intention, and their lives to. Weigh all of the evidence, and I believe I'm presenting evidence that hasn't been presented for 2,000 years. And once you've looked at it, you know, I bring the horses to water. I don't make them drink. I try to bring the people to the evidence, but I don't make them think. That's all I'm here to do, is give you the ability, give you the information. I guess I'm the Wikipedia of modern Christianity and religion, give you the information you need to decide what's right for you.
Something given has no value. I remember that as a quote from Starship Troopers, and they talked about the use of force in order to resolve issues throughout history. Naked force has resolved more issues throughout history than any other factor, and the contrary opinion that violence never solves anything is wishful thinking at its worst. And I think about this a lot, actually, because people would take that and go, well, I guess you can only accomplish things with violence. No. It's when somebody's trying to kill you or take you over and destroy you with violence, that is when you can fight back and resolve it with violence, but not before then. Sometimes it's a last resort and you are not given a choice, and that is the only time when you should make that choice, is when you don't have one.
Protection. I agree.
Right, it is the people that go out willingly, preemptively attacking, killing, destroying, and fucking up the bloody planet. They're the people who are full of shit and want to turn this entire planet into a piece of shit, just like them. Okay, they want to create this whole image of the Earth in their own image. Okay, they think they're gods. That's what psychopaths are. They think that they're gods in human form, that they can do no wrong, that we are their subjects, and that we are subjugated beneath them, that we are their property, that we are cattle, that we are slaves. The people like me and Jeff, we endure a lot of abuse and trolling and a whole bunch of other annoying things because we know that they're full of shit, and we tell everybody that they are. Jeff, do you have a website where people can peruse more of your diamond-grade New Testament teachings?
Absolutely. It's Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, Daugherty, D-A-U-G-H-E-R-T-Y.com or ChristianWhistleblower.com. Vinny, thanks for having me on. It's always an honor and a privilege to spend some time with you. I appreciate being here.
Well, this is a really profound conversation. Ironic we were talking about Christianity. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, where we are a symbol of freedom. That's right, symbols for the symbol-minded, just like a crucifix. And we'll see you again sometime, assuredly. Thank you very much.